It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're devoting a good part of our program today to the sentencing of former Pittsburgh Police Chief Nate Harper. It was roughly 1 year ago that Mr. Harper resigned before he was indicted on conspiracy charges and failing to file tax returns. He pleaded guilty in October to conspiracy to commit theft as well as the tax charges. Yesterday, U.S. District Judge Kathy Bassoon sentenced Mr. Harper to 18 months in prison and ordered him to repay over $31,000 from an unauthorized slush fund that he spent on himself. Nate Harper did have his defenders and those who felt that he should not receive any jail time. So the question we're putting out to you today is, does the punishment fit the crime? You can join our conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is essspgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at essspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. How should public officials be punished for their crimes? Is community service a better and more positive way to go? 412-246-2002, the number to call. I'm joined now in Studio A by Pitt Law Professor David Harris, a frequent guest on our program. David Harris, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Good to be with you again, Paul.
In your opinion, does the punishment of 18 months in jail plus paying back that $31,000 fit the crimes of Nate Harper?
I believe it does. I know that there were voices saying that he should not serve any prison time, that he had lost his pension, lost his standing in the community, shamed his family. He said in court, as Deanna told us just a minute ago, that he's a broken man. And there were many people who said, you know, prison would just be piling on for him and it might even be dangerous. I have to disagree with that.
Why is that?
Because Chief Harper was a public official, a high public official. And I think he'd be the first one to tell you he didn't just make a mistake. He betrayed the public trust. And when a person of high rank and great responsibility betrays the public trust, other considerations come in that maybe would not be there if it was just a regular Joe or Jane. These folks have been in the public spotlight. They have led. They have been out there as people who have command of certain public functions or serve in a legislature or whatever it is. And for them to turn around and steal from the public, just to take this case as an example, but corruption comes in many forms, we know, is a betrayal of the very office they hold. So Chief Harper did many good things over a long career. I don't believe he's an evil man, not at all. But he made some very serious mistakes as part of what he was as the chief of police. And that simply cannot go unaddressed in a way that people would be tempted to say, well, he just got away with it or something. The public and especially others within the department, those few who might be tempted, those few, they need that message. They need to see even the chief can go to jail.
So, and that was leading into a question I was going to ask you, which is how important is the aspect of deterrence in all this? So well, do you think that this sends the message to others who might be contemplating doing the same thing that, boy, I don't want to end up like Nate Harper?
Well, that's what we hope for. The criminal law, we start with this in criminal law class when I teach it. The criminal law and punishment has four functions. It incapacitates the criminal. They can't do any more things while they're in jail. It gives the criminal his or her just deserts, retribution. It may rehabilitate the criminal and deterrence of criminal conduct. Now, we don't have to worry about Chief Harper himself being deterred. He's plenty deterred. But deterrence goes beyond the individual. It goes out to the community. It is meant as a message. And anybody, like I say, those few police officers or other public officials who might be tempted into behavior like this, they will see this and they will see this isn't just something you can get home confinement on or something. You will, despite your very high office, suffer going to prison if you are caught. That's part of the function of punishment.
Could this, as Mr. Harper's attorneys argued, could this have been accomplished without sending Chief Harper to jail? Was there any way to to create this deterrence, as well as the issue of equal justice, without having Chief Harper serve any time, even a day, behind bars?
I suppose it's possible to think of how that could be done. He is, after all, going to suffer severe personal losses, and there will be losses to his family, the things that they counted on for the end of his career. He will not be in law enforcement anymore, something he has devoted his life to, and he could have been put on some kind of restrictive probation. And I think in a newspaper column I read yesterday, there was a suggestion that maybe he should go to every police training class in the state and talk about how he went down the wrong path.
That was in Tony Norman's column.
That's right. All of those things I think are possible, and they would serve as punishment. But the deterrence rationale, the idea that we're going to send the message that this just won't be tolerated, there would be a sufficient number of people and perhaps public officials out there who would say, well, he didn't go to jail. Anybody can put up with that other stuff. All he's got to do is stay in his house with an ankle bracelet for 18 months or 3 years or whatever it is. And so I believe the message had to be sent in the form of a prison sentence. Now, it could have been sent with 6 months. It could have been sent with 12 months. It could have been sent with 24 months. But as the piece with Diana clued us into, it was right in the range. I don't believe that this sentence is too short. I don't believe it's too long. But in order to get across that the powerful cannot get away with this stuff, I do believe confinement had to be part of the sentence.
And how in addition to the deterrence aspect of all this, is the issue of how important is the issue of equal justice, the idea that even if you're the former chief of police, you're going to get the same amount or within the realm of the same amount of jail time as Joe average citizen?
It's very important, Paul. I mean, one of the things that I always remember is when I first saw the building in which the U.S. Supreme Court meets, there are four words that are chiseled above the door in the stone: equal justice under law. Now, we know in our society we don't always get to equal justice. There are plenty of ways in which we fail. But in a high-profile case involving a high-profile public official, if that person is seen to get a more gentle variety of justice than the general Joe or Jane Blow could get, that's just going to send a message of its own. It's going to say, if you're rich or if you're powerful or if you're special, you will get different treatment. And frankly, that's a message that we can't afford. It's important for all of us who follow the law. In order to respect the law, we have to believe it's fair. It would be fair if it was applied to us, and it's fair if it was in the ways that it is applied to the powerful. And when everybody's watching, that's when that message is most crucial.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer on 90.5 WESA, and our guest is Pitt Law Professor David Harris. We're talking about the sentencing that occurred yesterday in the case of former Pittsburgh Police Chief Nate Harper, who has been sentenced to 18 months in prison and ordered to repay $31,986,000 from an unauthorized slush fund that he conspired to create and then spent that money on himself. So he will be going to jail for 18 months. The question is, does that punishment fit the crime? We invite you to join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address, esspgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. How should public officials be punished for their crimes? And is community service a better and more positive way to go? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. David, there is, of course, the question of why does a respected public official end up going down the path that Nate Harper did? And about the time that former Chief Harper resigned last year, we invited Bob Altmans, president of the OPR Group, a public relations consultant, to weigh in on the hubris of power and why these things happen. And here's what he said.
I do think there is a unique sociological phenomenon that occurs in people who rise to senior executive positions, whether it's an elected official in public office or a CEO in the private sector. And that is that you begin to – you know, to put it mildly, you begin to believe your own press releases. You are surrounded by people who want to benefit from your success and your power and influence and don't want to do anything to upset the apple cart. Therefore, they become somewhat sycophantic. And when you are insulated from the realities and the perceptions of the real world, those who help get you there, it's easy to believe that, well, you know, I've created all these jobs. Surely my constituents wouldn't mind if I took one little, you know, advantage for myself here, since it's really a relatively insignificant amount of money, or I've created such immense shareholder value for my stockholders. Surely an extra beach house would be something that, you know, my board of directors would be willing to overlook.
So, David Harris, what about what Bob Altman's is saying here? And part of what can be applied to this rationale, at least in Mr. Harper's case, and we have no idea exactly what the man was thinking, but the lawyers brought it up in court yesterday. They said – they talked about his years of exemplary service, what he's done for the public. Does that sometimes get in an official's head to the point where they somehow use that to justify doing – what, in this case, Mr. Harper did, which was stealing money that did not belong to him?
Well, I think there's a lot to what Mr. Altman said. The idea that you believe your own press releases, you start to accept this larger version of yourself and say that you deserve it. I would put it slightly differently, I guess. When I see this, and again, I don't know what Mr. Harper would have been thinking, but it's as if the rules don't apply to you. You're somehow above the usual rules and the usual ways that things go. And this is what I see over and over in cases of public officials' wrongdoing. The cases that come back to me most in our area for this very same thing are the cases of the two public officials, State Senator Ori and Supreme Court Justice Ori Melvin. The law was crystal clear about using their government workers for campaign work, and yet they did it anyway. And they just thought that the rules didn't apply to them. And so it's easy to get that in your head and to start thinking, well, a little bit here or there, cutting a corner, going around the usual rules that the little people have to follow. I don't have to do that. You know, with Chief Harper, I got to tell you, this is a man that I knew personally, not very well, but I had worked with him on various policy initiatives in the police department involving the community and some other things. I couldn't have imagined that he would do something like this. I mean, I don't have any great insight into him. He's not a close friend, nothing like that. But I was really surprised. And I asked some people I know in the police department and who are former police officials, you know, what could account for this? And basically what I heard in a number of conversations was, you know, you step over that line and all of a sudden you're over it and it's not there anymore. And it's just very easy. You got to keep yourself very straight with a good moral compass. You got to always believe all the rules apply to you. There is never a time when they don't. And a person can really lose their way doing that.
412-246-2002, the number to call. Let's go to Ruth in Squirrel Hill. Ruth, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I think your show is the greatest.
Well, thank you for that.
I will just make two comments. I don't think that you can really compare the chief to the Ori's. You correct me if I'm wrong, but the chief admitted his guilt. He did not say he was innocent and put us through a long trial. That, I think, differentiates him. And also,
I think
he should have been confined to his home for a period of time, and that will be sufficient. Go ahead.
Well, no, I wanted to jump in because you made an interesting point there, and that is the idea that how much, David, should it be taken into consideration what Ruth pointed out, and that is that he admitted his guilt and therefore probably saved the court system some money by not dragging this out into a prolonged court case in which he would be fighting the charges that clearly he was guilty of?
Well, if he pleads guilty and admits his responsibility, I admit that that's a distinction between the Ori situation and Chief Harper. And I think it does count to the good for him that he did that, not so much because he saved the taxpayers and the court system money, but because it shows he took responsibility in a way that they never seem to have done up until this day, as far as I know. As far as the idea that he should have served confinement at home, I'm sorry, I just have to disagree with Ruth. When that sentence was handed down to Justice Ori Melvin, I can tell you my reaction that she didn't go to prison when her sister had gone to prison for 2.5 years and the wrongdoing was basically the same and she had had the same attitude that the rules don't apply to her and she didn't do anything wrong. I thought, this isn't right. And I heard that from a lot of people in Justice Ori Melvin's case. I don't think it would have been enough for Chief Harper to be confined to his home. And I say that again, knowing him, thinking that he's not an evil man. I don't wish bad things for him, but I really think the judge was right to try to send that message out and deter others who might be tempted.
Ruth, thank you for your call.
One more comment.
Oh, go ahead, very quickly.
Okay. I'm not – I don't have a background in criminology, but I've heard that punishment does not deter a crime. So maybe you folks know more about that and could comment on that.
Well, it's a good point, and it's certainly one that is worth debating, and that is the question, David Harris, of does this really work as a deterrent? Is somebody going to look at this and say, ooh, Chief Harper got 18 months. I'm not even going to attempt to create this slush fund and take money out of it?
No, some will take that message. Others will say, well, if I do it, I'm just not going to get caught. I'm not going to be an idiot like him. And others, it may affect them not at all. But the fact is that if we don't attempt to deter, if we send out the message that you don't have to pay a heavy price for betraying the public trust, that is a message too. And we don't want to send that message either.
412-246-2002, if you'd like to join the conversation about the sentencing of former Pittsburgh Police Chief Nate Harper with our guest David Harris, Pitt Law Professor. We have Jeremiah in Sewickley on the line. Jeremiah, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, glad to be here.
Good to have you. Go ahead with your comment or question.
My comment and question is a little bit this. I believe in a restorative model of justice because, as the lady pointed out, crime statistics show that the punitive system that we use does not deter crime in any way. And I think that because of the fact that Chief Harper's crime really is relatively low impact, if you're looking at the dollar amount and the actual effect on society, that it would have been much more productive to have him engaged in a process where he can actually be part of the healing process for society. So I would love to hear your comments about how that might play out in a better type of situation and scenario than what we currently are having right now with our punitive system of justice, which does almost nothing for the community.
Well, thank you, Jeremiah. That's an interesting point. It dovetails off of what Tony Norman wrote about yesterday, that if Harper were given public service instead of jail time and assigned to speak to police academy recruits as his punishment, that might produce a more positive outcome. That's what Jeremiah is saying. What do you think, David?
Well, I think he makes a good point in general. Our system is far too punitive and relies on incarceration far too much. We have the largest incarcerated population per capita in the world. Nobody's even close to us. No country incarcerates more than we do. I don't agree that there's no deterrence value, but I don't think that it's an either-or choice. I guess that's my main answer in Chief Harper's case. I do think it's important that there be some incarceration here. It could be 6 months or a year. It doesn't have to be 18. But that could be combined with public service. He will have a probationary period when he gets out of jail. Conditions of probation vary widely. But there's no reason that they could not have included speaking to those police academy classes or to grade school kids or doing any other kind of public service.
But nevertheless, you're saying that there had to be some jail time.
I really think so. I mean, I just remember that outrage when the justice, Ori Melvin, was given no jail time after all of that. And people really have a sense that it isn't fair.
But aren't we talking about a different crime there? I mean, she was involved. I mean, it's within the same realm of crime, of criminal activity, but at the same time, she was doing campaign work on public time. And
yeah.
And this was maybe a different thing involving Chief Harper.
Maybe so, but they are both public corruption and of a minor sort. I don't think either of these crimes is terribly, terribly serious. I'm not saying that they need to go to jail for 10 years or anything. But I do think, I mean, you're sitting on a Supreme Court of the state and you don't follow the rules and you don't think you have any obligation to the very legal system that you enforce. I mean, the punishment always involves two considerations. What was the who is the offender and what is the nature of that person's life and what has it been? And what is the offense? If somebody else stole $30,000 and it was the first time they had ever been in trouble – I think it would be fine to put the person on probation with heavy conditions and public service and so forth. But this isn't just any person. I think Nate Harper would be the first person to tell you that police have to be held to a higher standard, that we could not, as a police department, simply conduct ourselves like other people.
Let's go back to the phones. Again, it's Central Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. We're talking with Pitt Law Professor David Harris, and Charles in Morningside wants to
Hello.
Join the conversation. Hi, Charles.
Hi.
Go ahead with your comment or question, please.
Well, I'd first like to say that Mr. Harris, I've always thought of him as a very intelligent person. I've enjoyed reading his comments when he's written columns for the Post-Gazette. But I am disappointed in his stance on this issue because I don't think he's really considering the realities of the situation. He's talking about his opinions about why Chief Harris should do jail time, but... I'd like to hear him support those opinions with some facts. It seems to me that the crime doesn't warrant jail time for several reasons. One, because Chief Harris's career is basically over. He's not going to be committing a crime like this again. That's pretty clear. So spending the money to put him in jail and taking him out of circulation and removing the ability for him to do a crime again that he's not going to be able to do anyway, just a waste of taxpayer money. And it's not producing anything other than retribution, which I don't believe in. I don't think that's a value that society should be supporting.
All right, Charles.
So
let's let David respond to what you're saying here. It's a good point, David. What about what Charles is saying that Chief Harper won't be in a position? I think the key to his argument here is that he's saying Chief Harper won't be in a position to commit a crime like this again. Therefore, he doesn't need to go to jail.
Well, that's a good point, and I agree with it. But it isn't the only purpose for which we punish. Charles says he does not believe in retribution, and I would agree that our system as a whole is far too retributive. It's far too much focused on just deserts and punishment and not focused enough, say, on rehabilitation and deterrence. We're a lock them up and throw them away culture, and we have been for some time. But there are other purposes to the system besides just incapacitating the convicted person so they can't do it again or even just deterring them. And whether you like it or not, whether you think we do it too much or too little, retribution for society is clearly and always has been an accepted reason for punishment. I'm sympathetic with the idea that the taxpayers are going to have to spend money and, you know, it's not going to change the outcome in the sense that it will cause Chief Harper not to do it again. He's not going to do this again, even if you let him out tomorrow.
Well, isn't the argument somewhat the same as saying that someone who commits a crime of passion and murders their spouse –
they're not going to do it again either.
They're not going to do it again, right. but that doesn't mean – but does that mean that they should go free?
Right. It doesn't. And by the same token, yes, his life is over. He's lost everything. But that – you know, if you had a person who didn't have much to start with, and this was a first offense of stealing $30,000, you couldn't make the argument, well, they have nothing, so you don't put them in jail. You don't punish them. So – I'm thinking in terms of all the goals of the penal system – Retribution is certainly a valid goal, though it shouldn't be the only one. And then we do have to think about the message we send about public integrity, public corruption, and what might happen down the road. We simply cannot tolerate this.
And we have a tweet from Ben who says he, and he's referring to Nate Harper, should serve some time, no question. 412-246-2002, talking with Pitt Law Professor David Harris. We have Robin in Greentree. Robin, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yes, good afternoon. Personally, I think there's a lot of evidence to support the fact that deterrence is not of great value. I think that Chief Harper has suffered already. He's lost his pension. He's lost public respect. He, in his own words, is a broken man, and I agree. He probably is. I think it would be a greater value to the community if he were to serve in some kind of community-based community outreach program. Talking to cadets would be great. And I, at the end of the day, think that what Chief Harper did might be a reflection of the tone of the Ravenstahl administration. I realize he hasn't been indicted or can obviously charged with anything, but there is a lot of reason to support the fact that it was a relatively corrupt administration.
That's an interesting point, Robin. Is there something to be taken into consideration legally, David, within the context of the people that Nate Harper was working for, who allegedly might have masterminded this whole thing or created the path for the slush fund from which Nate Harper stole money?
I think all we know, Paul, is that Nate Harper was charged as part of a conspiracy and the leader of a conspiracy and pled guilty to that and admitted it. The judge would not have accepted his plea unless he was willing to say that. And as far as the public service aspect of what could be accomplished through a different punishment, again, I say it's not either or. It can be both and.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that in order to show that justice is even-handed when you're powerful – as when you are poor and powerless, some incarceration was warranted.
Talking with Pitt Law Professor David Harris about the sentencing yesterday of Nate Harper, former Pittsburgh police chief. And again, if you have not heard, the sentence, 18 months in jail and the return of the money that he stole, over $31,000. 412-246-2002. Let's go to Sandra in Latrobe. Sandra, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, thank you. He definitely needs to go to jail, and we do need to honor the Constitution, justice for all, especially when it's a police chief. He definitely needs to go to jail. This mamby-pamby, oh, let's do community service. If I went in and held up a bank and robbed it for $30,000, I'd be going to jail, and so would you.
Sandra, it's a good point, and I want to go back to what you said about you. You made a point of really emphasizing that he is a former police chief. David, does the consideration be – is it different for someone who was the chief of a department as opposed to if this had been merely a police officer?
I think so. I think we have to hold all police officers to the high standard that I think all of them would agree that they uphold every day. But when you are the public face of the police officer, don't forget, is the literal embodiment of the state's authority, wearing the badge, carrying the firearm. That person is the state, and he is the most visible symbol. He's the highest commanding officer. If justice doesn't apply to him, at least as strong and probably stronger than it would apply to any subordinate, people are going to notice that, and that's not a small thing. We have to have even justice, and it has to be commensurate with the crime and the person.
Pitt Law Professor David Harris has been our guest. We've been discussing the sentencing of former Pittsburgh Police Chief Nate Harper, who has been sentenced to 18 months in prison. David, thank you as always for a very enlightening conversation. We appreciate it.
It's good to be with you, Paul.
Coming up, we'll hear about what's being done to clean up illegal dump sites. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.